Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We are in the snippets of the Mueller Report world, day two, and here are some of the developments from the last 24 hours. Democrats are questioning whether Attorney General William Barr, releasing so few snippets of the Mueller Report so far, is misrepresenting it or trying to give an exaggerated impression of how much it clears the president. Legal analysts are puzzling over Mueller's decision not to rule on obstruction of justice one way or another. Remember how the House voted 420-0 recently on a resolution that the Mueller report be made public? 420-0 in the House? Well, yesterday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell blocked the Senate from voting at all on that resolution. The Democratic heads of six House committees sent a letter to the Attorney General demanding release of the Mueller report by next Tuesday, a week from today. Trump and his allies are trying to discredit House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff and other individual politicians and media pundits who they say made false, overreaching statements about the evidence for collusion during the investigation. And Lindsey Graham, who is now chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, wants another special counsel to investigate how the Russia investigation got started.
By any reasonable standard, Mr. Mueller thoroughly investigated the Trump campaign. You cannot say that about the other side of the story. And what I hope Mr. Barr will do is understand, for the country's sake, appoint somebody outside the current system to look into these allegations, somebody we all trust, and let them do what Mr. Mueller did.
Lindsey Graham yesterday. With me first today is Politico White House correspondent Darren Samuelson. Thanks for coming on again, Darren. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me back.
Who will decide if that special counsel that Lindsey Graham wants is created?
That would be probably Mr. Barr's decision, the Attorney General, William Barr, with the assistance of his staff, his advisors, perhaps Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who has a couple more weeks, I think, on the job before he moves on to his next life post-government.
Any indication that Barr would actually do that, or is this just a Republican talking point?
I'm going to go with Republican talking point. We've been hearing this for a long time from President Trump's allies. This has been a point that Joe DiGenova, who nearly joined Donald Trump's legal team back almost a year ago, has been making over and over and over again on Fox News. It's something Donald Trump has sort of suggested on occasion, that they're bringing in new special counsels. I interviewed Rudy Giuliani yesterday about this, and I actually interviewed him on Sunday morning as well before the report came out, and I talked to him again yesterday. And on both instances, he said he didn't think a special counsel was necessary. He definitely thinks that there should be a look into how this became, how this investigation started. But he told me that he thought that the internal mechanisms of the Justice Department itself could do the job. There have been inspector general investigations into parts of this. And I think that that is maybe the way that they would go, as opposed to, you know, going through this entire process again with an independent special counsel under regulations that really are mainly used for, you know, when it's an executive presidential investigation at the level of the White House. I think that's when these regulations are triggered. And, you know, they've only been triggered a couple times since they were put into place at the end of the Clinton administration after the Monica Lewinsky impeachment scandal.
Has the White House or anyone else reacted to the Democrats' deadline of next Tuesday to get the full Mueller report to Congress?
I haven't seen anything yet from the White House. I mean, it's not really the White House's call on the release of this. It's really Bill Barr's call. Bill Barr laid out his timeline in the letter that he released on Sunday, saying he'd move as fast as he can once he has a chance to look through the entire Mueller report and decide whether and help find and identify the grand jury information that can't be legally released. They have to look for classified information. They have to protect sources and methods that were collected in the course of this investigation. So there's going to be redactions from that document. It's really not the White House's call unless there's some executive privilege issues which we don't really know if there will be. Surely the White House will want to take a look at this document. I have been in touch with people who have said that they will at least probably get a chance to do that. But first and primarily, the delay that we're waiting for right now is for Bill Barr and Robert Mueller's team to go through this document and identify the grand jury material that can't be released publicly.
Is Mueller himself involved in that process?
Yeah, Barr said he said that the special counsel's office would be involved. I don't know if Mr. Mueller himself would be the person, rather than some of Mueller's deputies who are most familiar maybe with the report as well. We know that Mueller's job is winding down. It's a matter of days, I think, before he actually does hang up his hat and move on to the next chapter of his life. We are seeing a number of the Mueller people signing off from various parts of their work. Yesterday, there was a whole flurry of legal activity in the Paul Manafort case that sort of still hangs out there, where a bunch of the Mueller lawyers filed notices with the court that they were actually leaving the assignment and handing things off to the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office. So to the question of whether Mueller himself will be a part of the review, I would imagine he would be, because he's going to ultimately get a call to testify on Capitol Hill. And so, yeah, it's likely that he would be a part of the decisions on what actually is allowed to be released publicly.
The House voted 420 to nothing, meaning every Democrat and every Republican who voted, to support public release. Why did Mitch McConnell block a vote on that resolution in the Senate yesterday?
That is a question for Mitch McConnell, I think, more than anybody. You know, it's really hard to say. I mean, it's a non-binding resolution. It really wouldn't. I mean, it would have obviously had some powerful symbolism if the Senate had signed off on it. I think Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham, who blocked that a couple of weeks ago when they tried to do it, I think that they are definitely taking some messages and I wouldn't say orders from the White House, but certainly they're probably hearing from the White House. There are, as I just said, these kind of nuanced gray area details that need to be reviewed in terms of grand jury information and sources and methods, and also protecting for ongoing investigations. They don't want to tip off potential defendants in the future or witnesses that they could be the subject to another investigation. So, that's maybe the legal reasoning for why you don't want a full disclosure of this report. And I guess, maybe the wider messaging that comes across from a unanimous 420-0 House vote signals to probably the American public that they're going to get to see everything, when in fact they're not going to get to see everything. And I think that that's always been known, but there's just this challenging disconnect in getting that across to the American public.
Well, nobody expects the public to see everything, meaning real classified information will be kept classified, certain things that took place in secret grand juries to protect people's privacy will be protected. But is there reason to believe there will be a real tug of war over how much gets released that pertains to the president's behavior?
Yeah, I think that there is. There's definitely going to be a tug of war. I mean, this gets to the heart of the James Comey lesson from 2016, where if you don't charge somebody in an investigation, should you be splashing everything out there for the public to see? And, you know, this entire investigation for Robert Mueller centers around, or I should say it's built on, you know, regulations that Mueller was set out to follow, that were established after the Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton impeachment, that really had some limits, some borders on how Bob Mueller could ultimately produce what he found. And I'm saying primarily there was this old requirement in the law prior to impeachment, prior to 1999, that actually required the independent counsels of that era to report publicly on any impeachment-related findings. This is why we got the Ken Starr report, the famous 400-plus page document with all those salacious details. In the case of Robert Mueller, the only thing he was ever really required to do was turn in this document that he did on Friday saying, here's who I prosecuted and why, and here's who I didn't prosecute and why. And it's that second part, the part where he says, I didn't prosecute and why, where now the burden is on Bill Barr to decide whether to release that information. And for Mr. Barr, it's a tough decision, again, because if he probably doesn't want to splash all of that information out there. He has said as much. Rod Rosenstein has recently talked about not wanting to put that information out there. Now, it is a big challenge, and we're going to get into a legal fight, because Congress has a constitutional ability or you know, requirement to as a check and a balance on the executive branch. And so they want this material, and you know, they're going to sue for it, I think, if they don't get it straight up from the Justice Department. And if you look back at the Watergate era Nixon precedents, you know, for executive privilege and blocking of things, it's likely the Congress will get it, but there will be a fight between now and then to that point.
Listeners, we can take your phone calls for Darren Samuelson, Politico White House correspondent, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, here in the Snippets of the Mueller Report World Day 2. Here's Lindsey Graham again, this time on the prospect of Attorney General Barr coming to testify about the Mueller Report.
What's next, I hope, will be that he'll come to the committee, release as much as possible of the Mueller Report.
Do you expect a tug of war over Barr testifying before Lindsey Graham's Judiciary Committee?
No, I don't think there'll be a tug of war there. That's the Committee of Jurisdiction over the Justice Department. I think Bill Barr will be testifying before Lindsey Graham. He's going to be testifying across the Capitol before the House Judiciary Committee. We know that Jared Nadler has said he wants that testimony. But there's also, before either of those committees get a crack at Mr. Barr, Mr. Barr is going to be up on Capitol Hill, it looks like, to testify about his budget proposal before the House and Senate Appropriations subcommittees that have responsibility for the Justice Department budget. And I think in both situations, you're going to get questions about this from those members that do have the purse strings over the DOJ. And those hearings, I think, are scheduled for in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So we're going to get Bill Barr up on Capitol Hill. Now, those hearings will be primarily about his budget, but you can imagine lawmakers are going to take a chance and a shot at asking questions about that. So I would expect Bill Barr for a number of weeks to be up there. It is possible, I should add, you know, Bill Barr could send Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein to those budget hearings in his place. This happened, I think, it was either last year or 2 years ago, Jeff Sessions sent Rod Rosenstein up in his place for those hearings. But either man, are very familiar with the intricacies of the Mueller investigation and will be questioned through and through by lawmakers about their decisions overseeing the special counsel's investigation.
What, if anything, do you know about the William Barr-Rod Rosenstein relationship? Rosenstein has had a reputation through this whole thing of being a relative straight shooter, I think. He appointed Mueller in the first place and decided that a special counsel was warranted in the first place. William Barr, there are a lot more suspicions that he's a homer for Donald Trump. How do Barr and Rosenstein get along?
You know, they've only worked together closely for a couple of weeks since Mr. Barr took over as Attorney General. So we haven't really gotten a good look at that relationship. I know they have been together a couple of times in public. They were there together for the Jeff Sessions ceremony last week, where Jeff Sessions was able to take home his chair from the White House cabinet room. And there was a lot of joshing around and joking in that particular situation. You know, as for this, I think that Mr. Barr probably implored Rod Rosenstein to stay for longer than he intended to. He was planning to leave within 3 to 4 to 5 weeks after Barr took over. That should have ended right around now. So having Rosenstein there, who clearly was the he was the supervisor of Mueller's probe for the large bulk of it, really, even when Matthew Whitaker, the acting attorney general, was there, Rod Rosenstein and his deputy, a gentleman named Ed O'Callaghan, were the supervisors of the Mueller probe from a logistical official level. So I think that Barr leaned on Rosenstein here in this period of time. Clearly, he referenced Rosenstein in terms of the decision on obstruction and making the decision that they ultimately thought that the president did not commit obstruction of justice, even though Mueller didn't take a position on that. I think Barr was able to sort of use Rosenstein in some respects to justify the decision that he did put out there. So I think that's the extent of what we understand from that relationship. We do know that Mr. Barr and Mr. Mueller go back 30 plus years. They're friends that came out at the confirmation hearing. Their wives go to Bible class together. So, you know, this is a small world. I will say that as well about the people at the top of the Justice Department, whether it's the Democrats in charge or the Republicans in charge. It's a small group of people who do know each other very well. And, you know, they do come in and out of administrations, you know, as the revolving door moves here in Washington, whether it's a Democrat or Republican in office.
Let's take a phone call for White House correspondent from Politico, Darren Samuelson. Tina in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tina.
Oh, hi. Good morning. By the way, last time I called in on this topic, I received a threatening telephone call telling me not to talk, otherwise I'd be locked up or they would attack me on the streets of New York City. Are we under threat if we decide to talk and discuss this topic? Because that's very concerning to me. In addition to that, my real question was, is this a cover-up that they won't give us the report?
Well, there's no reason to think that regular Americans are under threat for calling into a talk show and expressing their opinions. And I don't know how anybody would have gotten your contact information to call you just from having heard your name and your borough on the show. Do you have any idea?
No, that's why I was very curious. I saved the recording. You know, I saved it because, you know, obviously I was very concerned about it, but it was a few months back, but I still saved the recording. Because you know, Trump has said he was going to threaten his opponents recently in the news with the police, with even the military, with his bikers and all of that. And now there's this cover-up, and he's trying to threaten, you know, Congress people again. So I'm just really kind of worried about all this, and I was just curious what this gentleman thought.
So her question to you, Darren, is, does it seem like a cover-up?
Does it seem like a cover-up? That is certainly something that the Democrats that I was speaking with, I'm going to say I haven't been up to Capitol Hill since the report came out, but in the days and weeks leading up to it, there was concern that that there would be a cover-up. I heard that from a number of Judiciary Committee Democrats who were concerned primarily with the release of the report and whether Bill Barr would, you know, slim this thing down and not release the full findings. And, you know, this is, again, this was pre-baked in some respects because we are, again, relying on a Clinton-era regulation that was set up in part because, I will just to back up for a second, in 1998-99, there had been this feeling like investigators like Ken Starr had just gone just too crazy and chased down every single rabbit hole, every possible investigation. I mean, the Bill Clinton White House was under investigation for something like 6 or 7 years of their time, from Whitewater to Vince Foster's suicide, all the way to you know, the Monica Lewinsky affair that led to impeachment. And so, you know, they decided to stop that process and instead create this different process that's under a set of regulations that basically really does limit the public reporting of what we get to see. And that can be aggravating to people who are wondering, you know, when an executive branch agency is investigating another executive branch agency, how does the American public get to see this information if the executive branch agency doesn't want to release it? And so this is now on Congress. I mean, can they pull this information out of the Justice Department, and will they then put it out there for all of America to see, you know, whether they splash all, you know, however many pages of this document up on their website and let us digest it for ourselves? I think that would probably go a long way to assuring people that there isn't a cover-up. You know, that's the best probably answer I can give you at this point is, you know, well, we all do want to see this document.
What about beyond the document, Mueller himself testifying, not just Barr? I mean, lots of people aren't going to believe Barr's rendering of Mueller because Barr wrote that long public essay kind of defending Trump against this investigation that apparently led Trump to hire him as attorney general. So what are the prospects of Mueller speaking for himself?
Great question. That was what I was up on Capitol Hill talking to members about that particular day that I'm thinking about, where I was outside the House Judiciary Committee. It was about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. Wrote a story about this exact topic up on Politico. I highly encourage you and your readers to read it. It's about, I think, about 2 weeks ago. If you Google Mueller testify Capitol Hill, you'll see it. He is probably going to get called. And, you know, the most fascinating part would be if they try to put him next to Bill Barr and put him on the same table as William Barr and try and see if there's any daylight between the two men, if they put him next to Rod Rosenstein, or do they have him testify by himself? You know, no doubt this will be, you know, probably the biggest hearing I've ever covered in my 20 years in Washington. And I think everyone will be watching it closely. One of the conclusions that I drew when I wrote that story is Mr. Mueller is a by-the-books investigator. We've seen that by the fact that the guy has not commented at all for all 2 years that he's been on this job. He has, you know, really just laid low and let his investigation do the work. So if he does end up testifying on Capitol Hill, which is likely to happen, I'm going to tell everyone, lower your expectations on that, too. You're not going to get Robert Mueller venturing very far off script from what, you know, DOJ says and, you know, urges him or kind of what lines do they draw. As a prosecutor, you're not going to likely see him do the kinds of things that James Comey did. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. You know, does he? I don't think he will break script. And, you know, you could go back and look at some of Mueller's testimony on Capitol Hill when he was FBI director, and you'll see, you know, he very much stayed by the book. He would often, you know, duck questions where he wasn't allowed to talk about things. I think you would get a lot of "I'm not allowed to talk about it" kind of answers, and there would be a lot of grandstanding, you know, from both sides of the aisle that probably will distract from the actual news of the moment with Mueller on the Hill. You know, so, you know, strap in for what will be, you know, an amazing moment in American history if Robert Mueller's testifying, which I think will happen. I couldn't tell you when. I bet it's at the end of the process, you know, as the Democrats do their oversight, as opposed to something that's going to happen, you know, here in the springtime.
You wrote a story yesterday that said the Monday morning quarterbacks are now out to get Robert Mueller. What Monday morning quarterbacks, and get him for what?
Yeah, this was coming out on Sunday. People were critical, Democrats in particular, Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Senator Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut, who's been a prominent member of the committees that have been dealing with this in the Senate, even Dick Durbin, the Senate minority whip, were critical of Robert Mueller for not subpoenaing Donald Trump and forcing him to testify under oath in the same way that Bill Clinton did. About obstruction of justice, about everything for that matter. And this goes back to something that shadowed the entire Mueller investigation really from the start. Jonathan Carl from ABC asked President Trump, I think it was in May or June of 2017, just after Mueller was appointed, asking him, you know, I think it was on the Rose Garden, asked President Trump if he would sit down for an interview under oath. And Trump said 100%. And then slowly over the course of the next year, he backed away from that. And ultimately, he was getting requests or he was being heard from, he was being urged by everyone from Newt Gingrich to Roger Stone at the time. You should instead just go with written questions. If you were to be under oath, you know, you are someone who is likely to grandstand or fudge the truth, and it could lead to a perjury trap, was the warnings that he was being given. And so ultimately, we got written questions instead, as opposed to a sit-down interview. It clearly looks like there were points where we knew that there was talk of a subpoena. This came out, I think, early last year, where we heard that John Dowd, who was the president's lawyer at the time, got into a pretty loud shouting match with the Mueller people over the idea of a subpoena. Ultimately, Mueller never pulled that trigger. We also know that there wasn't an actual standoff between Mueller and DOJ, on Friday, when Barr announced Mueller was done, there was another requirement under those regulations I've been talking about, where Bill Barr was actually required to say to Congress, had there been any fights or standoffs or moments where Mueller asked to do something and his supervisor said no. And Barr said on Friday that there were no such instances. So clearly there was no standoff to the point where there wasn't a subpoena issued over Mueller's objections. Now, clearly, going back to your other question about whether if there was testimony from Mueller, this will be a question that will be asked, and they'll try and get Mueller under oath to explain how the subpoena fight played out. But this is one of the Monday morning moments. The pushback I was getting and why I think people think this is a little bit of a red herring is it's multifold, but it boils down to Mueller didn't want to go down, you know, a long legal fight that could have gone all the way to the Supreme Court, where he could have lost under the new majority of conservatives. On a subpoena of the president. Also, you need to try and get a subject or a target, you know, to express their intent if you're going to prosecute them. And it's very unlikely that someone who's brought in for an interview is going to testify and admit to that under oath. The president probably would have taken the Fifth Amendment in that situation, which would have, again, been a wall. And then last but not least, this is a point Rudy Giuliani made to me yesterday, is that the Trump team produced enough information in the release of documents and witness interviews in the course of the earlier stages of the investigation. And the president himself had said enough publicly that if this had gone to court, the Trump lawyers would have been able to successfully argue that Mueller could have gotten this information somewhere else, and they didn't need the President of the United States to take time out of his busy schedule to actually sit for that interview. And so, therefore, this is maybe why Mueller backed down and didn't do the subpoena as well.
Reba in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Dan Samuelson, Politico White House correspondent. Hi, Reba.
Hi. How can they say that Trump didn't collude when I heard him on July 27th, 2016 say, Russia, find my email, Hillary's emails, and then the next day they hacked the DNC computer, and in July of 2018 he stood next to Putin and said, Dan Coats, my intelligence chief, says Russia meddled in our elections, but I don't believe him. I believe Putin, who said that he didn't meddle, which shows that he not only colluded with Russia, but he's a Russian asset. And according to Bob Woodward, Trump's lawyers did not want him to testify because it's impossible for him to tell the truth, and he would be brought up on charges of perjury.
Right.
And there is a double standard. Trump was investigated by a partisan Republican, and Clinton was investigated by a right-wing crackpot Republican.
Let me jump in and get you some answers on some of those things. I think there are very few people who consider Robert Mueller a partisan Republican. I think, in fairness to Trump, Bob Woodward, in his book Fear, concluded that he couldn't find evidence of collusion in his journalistic investigation. But still, Darren, to the essence of Reba's question, why wasn't the Trump Tower meeting? Why wasn't Trump saying, Russia, are you listening? And all those other things that we know about, why weren't they enough for Mueller to come to a finding of some kind of criminal conspiracy with respect to the election in cahoots with Russia? I guess that's what we're waiting for, a further release of content from the Mueller report to find out, because we really don't know his rationale when there are all those pieces of string that people thought were going to be knit together into a sweater.
Yeah, I agree with you, Brian. I need to see the report to really understand the rationale for why, you know, they were able to say there were Russians who were definitely trying to influence our election through the two indictments that were made last year. But on the Trump side, there was no actual conspiracy going from America back to Russia to do this and that. I mean, there are a lot of dots that people have connected over the last 2 years in public, whether it be in the media, on television, or even as you you look at some of the sprinklings of court filings that have come out. There has been a lot of noise on this topic. I mean, Donald Trump himself urging the Russians to hack into Hillary's emails, as your caller just pointed out, or the Don Jr. Meeting where he was eager to accept the negative information about Hillary Clinton. You know, the Trump campaign and their line on this throughout was, you know, we were too unorganized and too amateur to collude with ourselves, let alone with the Russians. There may be a kernel of truth to that. They did cheer it on as it was happening. Opposition research is certainly something that happens in campaigns on both sides and all sides, and has been a part of American politics from the start. So, you know, we have never experienced something quite like what we just experienced for the last 2 years. I will definitely, as I've studied the history of this and look back on now where we've been, clearly, it would be really nice to get to see that Robert Mueller report to have all of our itches scratched. There are, you know, we came up with just 25 subplots over the weekend that we put together into an interactive graphic, and we had to cull it down from, 100 or 150 subplots that are really out there. Because there have been just so many stories in so many different places about interactions on not just Russia, but other foreign countries as well. And I think, ultimately we might not get answers to all of these questions, which will probably spring up a cottage industry for years to come of people trying to figure out what really happened in 2016.
Just one other big one that kind of relates to Reba's is, if there was no collusion, that was criminal or otherwise damning. Why did so many people lie, even to the FBI, even under oath, even, you know, wind up pleading guilty or being convicted of lying about contacts with Russia from the Trump campaign?
I'm looking forward to the first Michael Flynn interview to ask him that question, whether I get to do it or someone else. Same question to Paul Manafort, to Rick Gates, to George Papadopoulos, who now is out with a book on this topic and insists that he actually wasn't lying. You know, I think it maybe is in the definition of lying and what these folks were thinking when they took these questions and their loyalty, you know, to President Trump, which I think is something that maybe we need to consider as well. I've done a couple of stories on that sort of demand, that one-way street that Donald Trump demands of his employees, of absolute loyalty from the top. It's something that he has expected of people back when he was a real estate mogul running his businesses in New York and as he moved into the White House. And so, you know, as people were questioned, whether it was Michael Flynn at the very beginning of the administration or Rick Gates, clearly they were not telling the truth based on the fact that they have been charged and pled guilty. But maybe they are the only ones who have an answer to that, you know, great question of why did you do what you did?
I read that freshman Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib sent a letter yesterday asking fellow Democrats to sign on to a resolution urging the House Judiciary Committee to open an impeachment investigation into Trump, despite whatever Mueller concluded. Speaker Pelosi, of course, has previously said no impeachment inquiry without some new bombshell. Do you know what Tlaib's case is?
I believe she's talking about emoluments, which is, you know, President Trump making money from private enterprises while in office. Forgive me, but I haven't done a full reading of her latest impeachment saga. I will tell you it's probably not going anywhere. Pelosi has a very strong hold over what the Judiciary Committee is going to do. And they're in a process right now of reevaluating, you know, not just what Mueller and Barr have put out in the last 36 to 48 hours. But, you know, they put out this letter, these letters, 81 of them, to people as they tried to collect the same evidence Mueller has to make their own judgment. And I think they're still getting those responses in. It is indeed, if I'm not mistaken, it does have to do with the foreign emoluments was one thing that she was looking at. You know, there's a lot of possibilities for, you know, what articles of impeachment could be, but to actually do it and to expect that it would go all the way through and become, you know, we could end up into a Senate conviction trial where I don't think that the appetite is anywhere close to being there. You need 20 Republicans to convict President Trump on an impeachment trial. And we just interviewed Susan Collins yesterday, who's, you know, would be one of the first to go if there was going to be a conviction. And she was nowhere close to being interested in this topic. She's also facing her own reelection campaign in Maine with a primary challenge from, I think, a pro-Trump Republican. So the politics are just not there for impeachment. And the Democrats also need to be, and I'm sure they are, very wise to the fact that if they did try and impeach Donald Trump and, you know, it failed to muster the necessary votes, you would end up with an even more emboldened Trump on the other side who would clearly be able to use this, you know, victimization as a line going into his own reelect, and you could end up with a second Trump term if a Democratic impeachment trial were to go forward. I think maybe the Trump world might welcome that in some respects, though it would certainly take the country in a direction that I don't think a lot of Democrats want to go. I think just in the last little bit, James Clyburn, who's one of the top House Democrats, said it's time to move on from this Mueller moment and to move on to the next chapter and start dealing with policy matters. So I think you're going to hear a lot more of that kind of stuff from both sides of the aisle, though, of course, the Mueller report still is not out yet. And, you know, there are other investigations ongoing at the state level and the federal level up in New York as well. So this is not over by a long shot.
Darren Samuelson, White House reporter for Politico. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with 6 days to go before the April 1st New York State budget deadline and so many issues still on the table, Governor Cuomo joins us next. Stay with us.